Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome in to another episode of Turn the Corner, a Detroit Tigers podcast. I am Kieran Steckley. With me, as always, is a man who makes all other writers green with envy. He is Cody Stavenhagen. How you doing?
Doing all right, Kieran. I am back down here in Lakeland for the home stretch of spring training. I think everyone is itching to get going, and sure enough, regular season, it's going to be here real quick.
All right, well, yeah, that is right. You are back, which means we have to do the customary vibe check. You know, I don't know when you said everybody, I don't know if you meant the team or just your fellow beat writers or anyone else involved in baseball in general right now, because the fans, I think, also agree with you. But, you know, you were gone for 2 weeks, obviously still following the team and, you know, all that stuff writing. But you were gone for 2 weeks and now you're back. You're in the thick of it. What's a vibe right now?
Yeah, I think ready for the regular season is definitely the vibe. And I don't think that's unusual. This is kind of the week where I was talking to a player who's like, yeah, this is the week everyone's just kind of over spring training. And you can feel that a little bit. To be honest, the energy kind of died down some. I think that's normal. I think that happens every year. I've done this probably for every team in baseball. Spring training gets really long. Everyone's, you know, ramping up. They're ready for the regular season. So I don't think it's a bad thing. It's just the reality of a really, really long spring. This is kind of a dead time in camp right before these final roster cuts. I mean, you have some guys fighting for their lives here, but for the most part, everyone wants to play meaningful games now.
Yeah, and that's something also that you wrote about, not Tiger specific, but you wrote about on The Athletic, some great Ron Washington quotes in there as well.
Gotta check out the Wash quotes, man. Amazing. If you think spring training is too long, check the generation, he said. It's the young folk trying to shorten spring training. The young folks, in this case, including AJ Hinch.
And you know what? I'll just say real quick on that. I don't necessarily think anybody's technically wrong on this issue. Like, I would not be upset if they shortened spring training. I also don't necessarily have a huge problem with it right now. And Ron Washington, I mean, it's like, yeah, you read something like that, you know, like, I don't want to really come out like strongly against Ron Washington, you know, it's just too great of a quote. But yeah, it is a little, it's not really dog days. We used that last week. Now it's just kind of like it's the valley before the climb, right? So that's how I would describe it. But to Major League Baseball's credit, they did try to supplement this time of spring training with a new event, and they called it, as we joked last week, the VD-esque name of Spring Breakout. And we got to see top prospects from every team face off, or at least, you know, in a game. And the Tigers have no shortage. What are they? They're top five in various farm system rankings. And excitement level, I think, is pretty high for the farm system in general. You were there. You watched. You saw Max Clark. You saw Jace. You saw, you know, all these names that we kind of read about, but we don't necessarily get to see all that much of. So your impression of the first spring breakout, and then I assume this was probably your first time seeing Max Clark play in a, you know, high level competitive situation. So kind of take us through your experience with the spring breakout this year.
Yeah, I think kind of mixed experiences. I like the spring breakout idea. I found myself watching some of the other games even when I wasn't really planning on it. But when you're kind of sitting there at night, it's like, or in the early evening, it's like, okay, I'll watch Skeens versus Holiday, you know? It's like, comes prospects? Yeah, sure, why not? And I think the players were really excited. Some of these guys had never even played in the big stadium in Lakeland before, some of the lower-level guys, or got to put on a uniform and you know, play on something that's televised. It was a big deal for the players. You could tell they were amped up. So I think that was really the coolest thing about it, just seeing how the players took to it. On the flip side, it was a weird contrast. It seems like the online prospects community really interested in this game. I made sure to plan my trip back down to Lakeland so I would be there for the spring breakout game. And then you get there and it's like the least attended game all spring. The attendance was a little over 2,000. It was a really dead atmosphere. And I was kind of like, what happened to all the excitement for these prospects? Maybe it's just because the Tigers didn't want to throw Jackson Jobe in this game. I don't know. Probably would have got a few more people in the seats. It ended up being somewhat of a sleepy game. The big highlight, Jace Young, he homers twice. That's great. At the same time, it was kind of like, well, we've already seen a lot of Jace Young. Brant Herter started the game. We've already seen a lot of Brant Herter. It was great to see Max Clark. I would be remiss. Like, I'm not going to make grand scouting conclusions off three Max Clark ABs. Thought his swing looked a little big. I kind of have a feeling this kid, he's a showy guy. I think he was trying to go yard for the cameras. But we got to see him draw a walk, show some pitch recognition, steal a base. He was flying. Talked to Max afterward. Yeah, he's a showman. But it's kind of that thing I've said since he was drafted. Sometimes from afar, I feel like the Max Clark vibe, the aura, can almost rub someone the wrong way. Like, I've certainly had those thoughts in my mind. And then you go and you talk and you meet Max Clark and you're like, man, I kind of like this kid, you know, and I liked what Alan Trammell said. He's like, it's been a while since the Tigers have had a personality of this magnitude. And Tram said, I think it's going to be really good for the organization. You know, and he said there's substance to it because Max Clark goes about things the right way. So I also watched Wyatt Langford hit a grand slam on TV. So those debates are going to continue. But I'll say again, Max Clark's going to be a good prospect, man. The Wyatt Langford comparisons are going to follow him, but this guy's 19 and he has a lot of potential. I'm looking forward to seeing him play. I think we're going to see plenty of Max Clark highlights on social media all year long.
It was really funny to read his quote about, you know, the stolen base. He knew exactly the timing of the pitcher, I'm paraphrasing here, but it was something to the extent of, I mean, I could walk to second base with that.
That's exactly what he said. That's not even a paraphrase. I was like, yes, keep doing that. If anyone tells you don't say that, don't listen to him. Keep saying stuff like that. It's awesome.
Yeah, and it also occurred to me, I was like, he, you know, he's for several years now been, I don't want to say like social media star, but he's on it. He knows it. He embraces it.
No, he's
it.
A social media star. All right. Let's be real.
All right, well.
It's his whole thing.
That is definitely part of it. And he has to know some of, like, A, what Langford's doing. And then B, I'm sure he's aware of general, like, I don't think there's any negative discourse about him on Tigers Twitter, like him specifically, but there is definitely some lamenting of passing on Langford. And I'm curious, this is an unanswerable question unless he were to ever say it. I'm curious how much of that is like on the front of his mind sometimes. And maybe that played into the showcase aspect of this. But it was still kind of exciting to see these guys in the Tigers uniform, like you said. And I love what you said, too, about Jace, where I'm not – obviously, he's going to start the season in the minors. And we expect to see him at some point. We've seen him plenty this spring. He's had some highlights. He's made pretty much everybody feel good about him. But it did almost – it just felt to me, I was like, oh, is he kind of graduated from this? Even though he hasn't. He absolutely has not, but it just kind of had that vibe to me. I don't I don't really know why. And
I did, you know, I felt the same. And then he homers twice. It's like, even though he was facing guys who were going to be in AAA, if not the big leagues, it was kind of like, oh, but yeah, he's too good for this game anyway.
Yeah.
So funny how that works.
It's kind of like, you know, because this is essentially a summer league-esque like environment that MLB's putting together. So it kind of felt like the second-year guy playing in the summer league. And, you know, it's like, yeah, you're going up against some good players. But overall, you know what I mean? It was kind of fun there. But any other guys, because he wrote about this for The Athletic, so any other guys that kind of got on your radar?
I think the guy who ended up being kind of the talk of the day outside Jace Young was one Josue Briseño. That's right, Josue is how we are going to say his name. And this is a guy who went from being unheard of to really shooting up the prospect rankings this preseason, kind of this diamond in the rough type guy. And you look, and Keith Law's got him number 10 in the system, and he's ranked on MLB Pipeline, and he's this big left-handed hitting catcher, and Fangraph says he could have the highest ceiling of any prospect not named Max Clark. It's like, that'll stop you in your tracks a little bit. And before the game, you know, AJ Hinch was raving about him. In batting practice, he crushed a ball that almost hit Scott Harris's office. He's indeed a big, strong kid, goes out in the game, hits a double that leaves the bat at 111 miles an hour. It's like, oh, yeah, I think we're all going to be paying a lot of attention to Josue Briseño this year. Really interesting player. People seem in love with the bat. Alan Trammell, and as far as comparing the swing to Miguel Cabrera, I don't know if that's actually accurate for a variety of reasons. Briseño has an open stance. He's left-handed. My early impression of the swing, it's a little longer, more of an uppercut than Miggy's ever was. But this is a dude with a real hit tool. If he's able to stay at catcher, like, that's really, really appealing. The thought is he's probably already outgrown catcher, may continue to outgrow catcher. And if he has to move to first base, then there's a really high bar for that bat. So I don't know exactly what type of player Briseño is going to end up being. But I'm going to say pure hit tool looks like it can be up there with anyone in the system, and really interested to see if he can stay at catcher. And, you know, even if he can't, like, how much power might be in this kid's bat? He's 19 and he was raking in the complex league and in a short stint in Lakeland, really impressed last season. So if you don't know the name, it's time to know the name, Josue Briseño.
Yeah. And it's long overdue for the Tigers to have a position player international signing. I don't want to say workout pan out, but give us some real substance at least on the journey.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. This guy's jumped all the guys who got bigger signing bonuses, the Campos, the Santana. You know, Santana got in at the end of the game, and I'm like, man, this guy kind of breaks my heart a little bit. I fell in love with Christian Santana as much as I have any Tigers prospect in my time doing this. Not for the personality, not for the chain. Like, the first time I saw him, I was like, his footwork is amazing. His hands are lightning quick. I thought he was going to be a dude. And his plate discipline's been really good, but he just hasn't hit so far in his pro career.
Yeah, well, that goes to show you it's a lottery, you know what I mean, with this kind of stuff. And, you know, scouting baseball in general, but especially, you know, the international side, I would say that's a fair statement. But, okay, so you mentioned Jackson Jobe, who did not partake in this spring breakout. We laughed a little bit, and we weren't the only ones about, like, all right, you know, Major League Baseball is trying to push this thing. He's a, you know, whatever prospect, top 20, top 15 or whatever in baseball, top 3 right-handed pitching prospect in baseball, and you couldn't afford to put him out there. And then he kind of put on a show anyway. So it wasn't in the breakout game, but it was a breakout of sorts. You were not there yet in Lakeland to see it in person, but just the sheer numbers of it. He's throwing 101, 102. He's got a tremendous miles per hour drop on his off speed, and then just, you know, some of his other pitches, the spin rates and all these fancy metrics that people talk about, you actually got to see it. And I texted with a buddy the day that it happened. I was like, I'm getting to the point where I'm probably as excited about Jackson Job ratio to the amount of actual professional innings logged as any Tigers prospect I can remember. Because you got to remember, he hasn't really pitched all that much as a professional, and of course hasn't been focused on pitching solely in general all that much. Obviously, he was a multi-sport athlete in high school. So, where are you at on the Jackson Job hype train after we finally got to see him in that sort of setting?
Yeah, there's a part of me that's like, guys, we cannot throw a parade over one inning in a spring training game. But I watch every pitch live, and wow, that was about as good of a one inning as you can have in a spring training game. Really, really impressive. A reminder that Job has some talent that is very rare. This is why the Tigers surprised everyone when they drafted him. And he's only gotten better since then. He wasn't throwing 102 in high school. He was not dotting his changeup like this. The slider had some crazy spin, but he's definitely made that a more executable pitch in games. Makes you wonder, makes you think. Should the Tigers waste bullets on this guy in the minor leagues? I'm not clamoring for Job to be on the opening day roster, but I think if Job comes out and performs well in games, he's probably going to start in Double A. I don't think you can waste a lot of time if he actually executes pitches, if he's able to give you 5, 6, 7 innings and continue to execute at a high level throughout games. Like, that's the thing I'm going to want to see from Job early on this year. If he's able to do that, man, like what we saw was different, and I don't think you can waste those bullets in the minors for long.
That's a good point. I mean, he pitched so well that immediately after the excitement was like the, oh, hope he doesn't get hurt. You know, because
is it good for him to throw 102? It's a fair question.
I don't know. Far be it for me to be an expert on that. But, you know, it's funny, we talk about, like, you got to find a spot for him, blah, blah, blah. Let's pretend that we're in a video game and there's no, and the injuries are turned off for a second, just for the sake of this discussion. It's already pretty crowded,
true.
Cody. And I'm here to say, a little bit after 6 Eastern time, on Sunday, March 17th, we still lack clarity on the two rotation spots with three guys for the Tigers, and that's of course Reese Olson, who, you know, he did give up the bomb today, but he 4 Ks, 4 innings. You know, that was it was a solo shot, it was a lone run. Manning continues to make us believe in promise, you know, to his credit, and Mize looks good as well. So we keep saying it will work itself out, and I don't necessarily disagree with that general premise. The thing is, though, we're running out of time a little bit for it to work itself out, quote unquote. So I don't know. What do you think?
I have a few thoughts on this one, too. One, the one that's not fun, when I get that injury report in my email twice a week and I see one name on it, I'm like, this is almost kind of ominous. Like we're a little bit past the Ides of March here, but there's something a little ominous in the air when just no one is hurt in spring training, because that doesn't happen. It almost, like, there's a weird analogy to like batting average when balls in play. Like if a guy keeps lining out, he's probably due to get a hit. And if all your players stay healthy, like someone's almost due to get injured because this is pro baseball. So even though we have only about a week left in camp, let's get to the finish line first, but let's play hypotheticals too. Let's say we get to the finish line and all 6 of your pitchers are healthy and they've all 6 pitched well all camp, especially the 3 guys competing for spots, Casey Mize, Matt Manning, Reese Olson. What do you do? And that's not a fun, man. Scott Harris and AJ Hinch are going to earn their lofty paychecks with that one, because that's a really, really hard decision. And I think if you're the guys making that decision, you really have to remove any biases from that conversation. I think you boil it down to a single question. Who's going to give you the best chance to win a ball game? And ranking those 3, that's tough. But if you remove the biases, I don't know. I don't know. I want to hear your ranking, Kieran. I think Rhys Olsen, if I really put it that way, I think I'm ranking him number one. There's a thought that he might be the one left off the roster. But this guy's had a six-start stretch of more dominance than we've ever seen from Mizer Manning. He's been pretty good this spring. You know, probably had like the worst first start, but has only made incremental progress since then. Has swing and miss stuff. He was really good, spotted the changeup, says he feels better with all three off speed. That's going to be the guy you leave off the roster. And then number two, kind of a crapshoot because both Mize and Manning can be really good. I think my thoughts on Matt Manning are pretty well known, but he's been too good this spring to ignore. Casey Mize also done some nice things this spring, but if you really think about it, he may be actually the one who has the most to prove just because he hasn't pitched in a long time. And also, if you're going to justify sending somebody down, and I don't think Casey Mize wants to get sent down, but I think it's easier to sell both to the player and to the rest of your clubhouse and to the fans, like, hey, we had to send someone down. Casey hasn't pitched in 2 years. We're going to get him some innings in Toledo. Maybe it ends up being better for him versus, hey, Matt, you had a dominant spring. We're sending you down anyway. Versus Rhys Olsen, hey, you were dominant your final six starts of last year. You've done nothing but continue to check the right boxes. We're sending you down anyway. The more I think about it, I wonder if the right thing to do is send Casey Mize to Toledo, which is a big, hard decision to make. But I'm starting to think it's the one that makes sense.
Yeah, so I've come to my own conclusion that I'm just not putting Rhys Olsen in Toledo. So that's a full stop for me, personally. And so then it comes down to Manning and Mize. Now it's going to sound a little echoey because you stole a lot of my points. But I think, in addition, one of the things I was looking for Matt Manning this spring, in addition to improvements of location and yeah, all that stuff, all the baseball jargon that people throw out there, I was looking at body language. I was looking at attitude. I was looking at, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. He gives up a bomb. How is he going to respond? I was looking at some of the little things. That's what I was most curious about, given this situation that he was in. And that stuff, to me, passed with flying colors. And we have to keep in mind there's injury, bad luck, and then there's what happened to him last year. I know I'm repeating myself a little bit, but that's a part of it as well, in my opinion. And so that leaves Casey Mize number three for me as well. And I just think that if you are going to have quote-unquote competition, and that competition includes stuff from last year, you know, stuff in workouts, stuff in spring training games, and whatever piece of the pie it kind of makes 100%, I think the smart move, the diligent move, and the we're not just bringing people along move of this regime, neither, both of which, Hinch and Harris at different times, inherited Casey Mize, you know, the prospect, the ball player, the starting pitcher. I'm probably saying go to Toledo, continue to work on your stuff, and you'll be here shortly, but I can't put Rhys down there. And I just have more confidence in Matt Manning. Because here's the thing. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, either Olsen or Manning go down. So Mize is up. How long are you easing this guy into, this is his first outings post-Tommy John? How long are you kind of eating some of the struggles that are going to come with when the expectation for this team is to be whatever level of competitive you set out to be? That's what the expectation is. And can you afford, after all these slow starts these past couple years, to throw out, I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but the guy with the biggest question mark out of those three, you're going to throw him out there over a guy who has at least a smaller question mark? I'm not sure I can really do that. And this feels like an attack on Casey Mize, but it's just the reality of coming off the surgery and a reflection of how well those other two guys have done.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm with you, then. I just feel like you said it best with the easiest to swallow. The other side is that, like, what's the toughest one to defend if Casey Mize struggles out of the gate pitching in the majors.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. If I still think Casey Mize will have a better career than Matt Manning. But if I'm looking at the first month of the 2024 season, I have more confidence in Matt Manning right now. If you spring training numbers don't mean much, but if you're really looking for a flaw with any of these guys, A, it's pretty hard to find. B, Casey Mize has walked some guys. You know, what does Scott Harris care about? Strikes, the strike zone. Mize, I think his fastball command has locked in the last couple outings, but there's a little bit of question there. Manning, you know, the thing I've knocked him for, not missing bats. You know what he's done? He's generated a lot of swinging strikes this spring, and it's just tough to ignore. He's probably, if I had to rank the three of most likely to blow up in an outing, I'd probably still have Manning number one. but right now, if you're talking, who do I think gives me a chance to win today between Manning and Mize? I think it's close, but it's like I'm going 55-45 Matt Manning right now. But I don't, that's what I think should happen. I don't know what's going to happen. I almost think Reese Olson might be the one who gets optioned. I talked to three different people around the Tigers today. I got three different opinions. I had someone say, and no one was confident, but I had someone say Reese Olson's probably going to get optioned. I had someone say it should be Mize. I had someone say it should be Manny. So I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you, like, we talked about buzzwords and stuff when it comes to spring training, and the whole like we want to have a competition thing is up there, right? With spring training isms, and yes, this has been a true competition, the result of which might be dictated on how real it was. However, they're in this situation partially because they locked in two spots via free agency in the rotation, two of them that, you know, for various reasons, have not really been talked about all that much this spring training. That's Maeda, or at least, like, in depth. You know what I mean? Like, Maeda and Flaherty. Like, we're not obsessing over Maeda and Flaherty. And those, and obviously, Scooble's been Scooble. But you, like, created and eliminated competition with those signings, especially, you know, monetarily speaking. And I think you're right also, and the way that they handle it will be very curious. You know, AJ is going to have some great soundbite whenever a decision is made and he has to talk about it. But to me, the safest play, and probably the right play, is not always the safest and the right plays are the same, but I think the safest and right play here is to have Mize start out in Toledo, because you always have the injury thing to fall back on, and it's hard for me to believe in competition as they portray it if Reese Olson is the one that gets option. So that's just me. It's a very tough decision.
You can talk yourself in circles on, as we've already done. As of Mize's last start, he ranked, I think, 10th among all MLB pitchers this spring in stuff plus. So like pitch modeling gets into the weeds, gets super nerdy, but it's like, oh, this guy's had this top 10 stuff in baseball, we're going to option. So if you want to talk yourself out of it, you can go that route.
Well, okay. So we'll wrap up it this way. Whoever gets optioned, and we're doing this with the sense that there's not going to be a six-man rotation, no matter how much people want to talk about it. Maybe you could argue that's a little stubborn, but that's all indications are that's how.
No, there's not going to be a six-man rotation. Yeah. And they're not going to start someone in the bullpen. I still kind of like the idea of just tandem starts, actually. So that way you can take all six. It seems like the Tigers have ruled that one out. I'm not entirely sure why. Probably because if you do that, you leave yourself a man short in the bullpen. I mean, if you did that, let's say you don't want – that means either you got to get rid of Joey Wentz, or you keep Joey Wentz, then you're not taking either Brisky or Fieto, both of whom have been lights out all spring. So that's not a perfect decision either. But I wish that option were still on the table, actually.
Is there, we'll wrap it up this way, is there any one of the three of them that if they got optioned, there would be like some higher measure of surprise? Like, I think for the weird reason, if Manning got optioned, it'd be more surprising to me, because you fall back on the youth with Reese and the injury with Mize, And then
It almost feels like Manning is the safest. I mean, I think Mize getting optioned would generate the strongest reaction, like the public, just because he's a 1-1 pick. But again, that's not even like a, and I'm sure AJ will say this with whoever get optioned, like it's not a bad thing. It's a sign of strength of our rotation, and we expect this guy to contribute soon. And he can say all that, and it'll actually all be true in this case.
yeah, fascinating to see how it wraps up. All right, well, speaking of free agent signings that somewhat kind of eliminated some aspects of quote unquote spring training competition, Ryan Kreidler is trying to make his case. And I gotta tell you, Cody, full transparency for me, I would consider myself generally bullish on the ceiling of carrying and using a lot Ryan Kreidler. That's kind of where I stand on it. I have a lot of respect for the tools that he does have. It's just, I just kind of look elsewhere for high-end potential. But here's the test. Here's the test for that, though. He's got he's got 1,000 OPS in spring. He had a home run today, and it's spring training. At a certain point, production is production when you take everything into consideration. And of course, the defense is the defense. Is it even remotely possible that he can cause some altering of plans, especially excuse me, especially in the wake of the Gio Urshela signing? And whatever you think, like, could he be a surprise replacement for, I'm just speaking out of turn here, but for like a McKinstry? I know it's a right left thing. Or even Beerling, who, like, Kreidler, they experimented a little bit with. I don't know how much he's doing in spring training right now, but they have done some outfield stuff for him. Like, is there any upset potential? Has he played himself, him being Kreidler, played himself into any sort of upset potential? Or is it kind of like Jay Hen, where at least, you know, we kind of, where we start is where we're gonna end here for these guys?
I think it's a lot different than Jay Hinn because there's actually a world in which you can see Kreidler functioning on this roster. There really wasn't with Jay Hinn because once they said he was only playing outfield, it was like, okay, how are you getting him in the game as another right-handed bat when you already have Canna out there, when he can't play center, when you're still going to want Carpenter at DH a lot and some other guys at DH. With Kreidler, I think it's a little bit different because there's a place for his defense, particularly if you're looking to get Javi Baez a day off his feet, or if Javi's just struggling to the point that you don't necessarily want to play him every single day. Kreidler's the guy who can hold down shortstop. He's probably the best defensive infielder in this entire system, and there's a place for that. I think there's a big part of AJ Hinch that would probably like Ryan Kreidler on the opening day roster for that defensive versatility. Problem is who you kicking off to carry Kreidler. I don't think it's McKinstry because you need his left-handed bat off the bench. The way the Tigers manage things, they're gonna want that. I don't think it's Veerling because the appeal of Veerling right now is being able to play center field to get Parker Meadows off his feet in case Parker Meadows struggles. That leaves Andy Ibañez, who is also crushing it this spring and has very much earned a roster spot. So, like, I just don't see a fit, but I think there's a non-zero chance maybe there's some sort of surprise and Kreidler makes this roster just because of his skill set. Like, outside chance, he probably still starts the year in Toledo, but we're going to see, as we've said, we're going to see plenty of Kreidler this year. He's done just enough at the plate. Maybe there's still some sort of surprise waiting to happen.
Yeah, and you know, we're guilty of falling in love with guys in spring training who do this and do that, because I mean, obviously Andy has more of a track an actual track record, not more of a track record, an actual track record of doing it in the major leagues. But if you just kind of look at it from a, what have you done for me lately thing. It's like, well, he's crushed it and Kreidler's kind of on his tail a little bit, and you want to reward guys for performing well, but it's like I said, there's way more factors there. The center field thing, I think, is the biggest thing that you mentioned with Vierling, because they're probably going to want to avoid Riley Green in center field as much as possible. I guess you could if you really needed to, but as much as possible. And the Parker thing, for as much hype, we'll talk about him in a second, for as much hype is going on with Parker, it's still on the board that he just really struggles. You know, that's just the bottom line. So yeah, I mean, I felt we needed to give Kreidler a little flowers there for a good spring, but it just kind of seems like this was, especially once Urshela was signed, it was kind of like this was pretty locked in. A guy who is locked in to the roster and an everyday role, the opposite of performing well in spring training, has been Spencer Torkelson, who is batting.
Surprise, he didn't say Javi Baez.
Yeah, that one's nothing new, right? But for Tork, who is, I was just kind of recalling all the thoughts that we had each spring, previous two and then this one, where we just really haven't really talked about Tork. You know, there was the excitement of the first one, and then last year I was like, what's going to happen? Now, it's a completely different thing, where it's like he's batting 129. I think he's got like, what, five hits, and like three of them are doubles, something like that. I guess is there any sort of like teeth clenching with Tork right now, because he has like most of the team these past couple of years. There's another guy who's kind of prone to slow starts here in April. But the difference is he's a guy that's actually banked on this year, as opposed to rookie year and then last year. Just, all right, let's just kind of see what can happen here. It is a different animal for him this year, and it is just spring training. But at the same time, you know, it's not like he's given us anything to be excited about either.
Yeah. Interesting how we view things for what feels like the millionth time I've said over the past month. Like, if a guy's doing well, you're like, oh, he's having a great spring. And if a proven guy is doing poorly, you just, it's just spring training. That's kind of the bin we've put Tork in here. And to be honest, like, I don't have many strong feelings or thoughts watching Tork this spring. Seems like his process has been good. The swing looks pretty similar to how it finished last year when he was really hitting the ball. I'd actually say, you know, defense hands-wise has been really good so far this spring. That's encouraging to see. I don't know. It's just spring training. He'll be all right. Let's go with that one.
And then, of course, if he struggles out the gate, it's like, we should have seen this happen. Should have seen it happening. I mean, that's just kind of how the game goes.
Yeah, there is a little bit of a reminder that even though he hit 31 homers last year, he still needs to become a little bit more of a well-rounded hitter, make contact a little more consistently, drive pitches a little more consistently. Like, that was on the table for Torkelson this year anyway, before, you know, anything that happened this spring.
Yeah, because, you know, we'll do this next week, kind of like things that if they go wrong, that'll be catastrophic. I can tell you he's going to be on that list. So speaking of guys that we haven't talked about that much, and has not really done anything of note in spring training, you know, Mark Canna, who is as secure a guy on the roster, because A, he was traded for, B, he's a vet, you know, C, he's one of the lone veterans on this team, and is looked to for some of that guidance and whatnot. It's gotten me thinking, like, and I'm going to say this right now. This is what I'm about to say is just a result of, all right, well, we've been talking in circles for a while. Let me come up with something creative to say and see if it sticks here. It's gotten me thinking, would it have been a better or could it have worked out roster construction aspect to, instead of trading for a Mark Canna, you're going to have in left field, you're going to have him DH sometimes, you're going to have him spill Tork at first base, What if you signed JD Martinez instead, and then you had an outfield consisting of a Green, Carpenter, Meadows? You could have signed another, you know, another veteran bat, maybe on a minor league deal with the invitation to spring training, and, you know, and kind of let it kind of shape up that way. And then you make Cary Carpenter also have some first base, you know, capabilities. You kind of get the flexibility in other aspects of the roster. Could that have been maybe a more, I don't want to say beneficial, but potentially higher upside way of kind of going about the roster construction in the offseason? Because that, I guess, has unofficially become the theme of this podcast. Guys that don't work out X, that didn't have competition X, like, what are we doing here? I just think that was, that's something that, avenue that could have, that we, that the Tigers could have gone down and potentially would yield higher results, even if it sacrifices a little flexibility with the DH spot. I think you could have supplemented it in other ways around the roster with other players that were available, and potentially even guys that are already in your system. Now, if Akil Badu had a great spring, that this point would land a lot better. Unfortunately, he has not. But I think the general premise exists there that they could have gone about it a different way. And if Mark Canha kind of lays flat, you know, I think that's gonna have ripple effects on the roster and the win loss record at large because of the way they went about the offseason. If that makes sense.
Yeah, if you're asking, like, would I rather have JD Martinez over Mark Canha? Not as easy as it feels just based off name recognition, because Canha's own base skills are legit, and he can be a better outfielder than JD. But my answer would ultimately be JD Martinez. I would feel better about this lineup if you had JD instead of Mark Canha. That's kind of like the outside 300,000-foot view of this. The reality is, like, it was never like this isn't a video game. This isn't like free agency opens and you just click and you sign who you want. The Tigers got Mark Canha because his option was going to be declined. There was going to be competition for him. They were able to work out a trade. They knew this guy was available. They had to pounce if they wanted to get him before another team, and they did that. At the time, probably no one would have foreseen that JD Martinez would not be signed a week before opening day. If you were to get in a bidding war for JD Martinez, you might end up with a contract you don't like. Maybe you don't even get him. Then you pass on your chance to have Mark Canha. Then suddenly you have no outfielder. So these are some of the reasons that, you know, it didn't go down like that. And when you really think about it, it's not that simple. You know, but in a perfect world roster building theory, like, that is an interesting question to raise. So I see where you're coming from.
All right. So I guess a curious Mark Canha thing too for me is, now I don't, obviously I know about him through his time in the bigs and then, you know, some of his, you know, fun social media stuff that, you know, was talked about right when he was first signed. But one of the lazier takes, I think, in sports media, and, you know, look, I'm guilty of this sometimes too. Like, it's just kind of like an easy thing to do, is the whole, like, veteran presence, guidance, mentorship stuff. And the reason it's lazy is, well, two things. One, it's kind of like an old-fashioned way of looking at, like, team building. This is, like, across sports. Like, that's, you know, that's sort of like the intangible things that, you know, certain, depending on who you are, you dismiss those or at greater lengths than others. Maybe it's a generational thing, to paraphrase Ron Washington. But number two is that person actually has to be willing to do that. Like, that has to be something that they actually want to do. And it's just not, all right, well, you're 30 years old, you're on the back half of your career, all of a sudden you gotta be a mentor. Like, there, how much of a mentor were certain guys that have been on the team that are no longer on the team the past couple of years? How much of the mentor were they really? You know what I mean? So I guess from a pure observational kind of anecdotal sense, like, is that something that we could, that you've even been able to see so far? Is that like, is that something? And even what does that really look like? I guess once the games count. for Mark Hanna to kind of be part of this selling point of like that veteran presence in the lineup? Like, what does that look like?
Right. It's one of those things that's impossible to quantify, but I think it does matter to some degree, especially in a team full of young hitters. You need someone who's had some experience, who's been around, who can maybe give you some pointers, just teach you more about what life is like in the big leagues. Like, I think there's value in having that around. In terms of what it looks like with Mark Canna, I don't know quite yet. You know, I want to see more. He's still new. I think he's still feeling things out, getting comfortable. So far, he's a little more quiet than I thought he would be, right? He's not super out there, super outgoing, but he does seem like a really smart guy. You know, Sunday he was over there chatting up Miguel Cabrera and they were talking about hitting and you saw Canna mimicking his swing. So maybe that was Canna learning from someone older than him. I haven't heard a ton of guys being like, oh yeah, Mark taught me this or Mark taught me that. But that doesn't mean he won't be a good mentor. I think it's one of those things that happens organically and evolves over time. Canna's not the type of personality who comes in and instantly changes a room. And there are guys like that out there. That's not what Canna is. But that doesn't mean his impact won't be felt throughout the course of the year.
Yeah. And that'll probably be something like when the team's on a little bit of a slump, like who's kind of the person putting in a little extra time and maybe something that you're privy to or not privy to, depending on, you know, behind the scenes in the cage, you know, that kind of stuff. So, but it is something that I would like at least some sort of anecdotal, tangible example like that would play.
It is interesting. I think AJ Hinch had said this, like he didn't want, or maybe if Scott Harris didn't want to just like anoint Canna the leader. And I think, you know, the fans, media, we're guilty of doing that. Well, Canna's the most experienced hitter on the team. We're going to call him a leader or the leader. And I think Scott Harris is more like, you know, he has to do that himself. That has to happen naturally. I can't just say that and boom, it happens. So that's something to think about, you know, opening week when you're listening to the broadcast and they're talking about what a great leader Mark Canna is. Like, I'm not saying he's not. I'm just saying, you know, let's actually start seeing some examples of it before we run too far with that label.
For sure. All right. Well, last little spring trainee type topic that popped into my head. I think we could say, I don't know if this is just anecdotal in my mind. I think we can say that Joey Cora is a little aggressive sending runners around the bases going home or maybe even second to third. I was like, Carpenter had a triple and I was like, I was a little surprised he, you know, legged that out, and to his credit, he did. I was like, you know, I wonder if there is an unwritten rule in spring training that just kind of send the guy every time, as long as it's like, you know, within reason of, you know, reasonable situation to send. Because I was thinking, it's like, you want to see how guys, you know, react in that situation. Can they get the extra base? Can they have the proper technique in that situation? Are they reading the ball well and put themselves in position, that kind of thing? And then I thought, you know, you're also kind of like being a good steward to the other team, where it's like they get live reps that actually, you know, relays from the outfield, relays home, relays to third, you know, that kind of thing. I almost feel like if I was a third base coach, and I guess to a lesser extent, like a first base coach in spring training, I might almost just send them every time. Just like, I just want to see. There's only one way to see how these guys react, especially if it's one of those, you know, you got to make a split decision. How are you going to handle it type situations? We've seen Parker Meadows do that 3 or 4 times this spring. I almost feel like they should send them every time. I don't know if that's even real or if that's just me kind of making things up in my mind. But I just kind of I look at it as a good thing. Send them every time. Let's just see what happens. It's spring training. I want to see how it goes.
Yeah, that's an interesting take, and this is kind of a fun debate. You know, I think if you're trying to instill like a culture of aggression, which is a term we heard a lot in AJ Hinch's first year, and then we never hear anymore. I don't know what happened to that. But if you're trying to instill that culture, I guess you got to start it in spring training, right? Like, let's be aggressive. Let's try to take some bases. Let's have the go more often than you don't go mindset starting in spring, where it's okay if you make a mistake. It's okay if you get thrown out. I actually, though, would almost fall more on the other side of it. And I want to say this was a philosophy under Ron Gardenhire, which is like, we really don't want guys running and sliding if they don't have to in spring. which is actually smart. Maybe you can make some fun out of it. Set a cutoff date with service time. If you've got more than a year of service time or more than 4 years of service time, you don't have to take the extra base in spring. We don't want you sliding in spring. But hey, if you're a rookie, we're sending you. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah, like the veteran treatment. Hey, guess what? My pants ain't getting dirty today. You know what I mean? but to bring that back, I think culture of aggression or whatever the correct phrase would be, I think would be good for this team.
I think we need to bring it back. Come on. What are we doing, AJ?
And Parker Meadows might be the poster child for that, if we're being honest. Which leads me to my next kind of thought bubble, Cody. I think we've reached a good time in spring, and some of these guys we've already talked about, where we can kind of gauge hype level. So this is a little bit different than spring training darling. It's hype level, because some of these guys that you'll see are not going to break camp. We know they're not going to break with the Tigers. So I have five names that just kind of came to mind immediately. Jackson Jobe, Jace Young, Cole Keith, Parker Meadows, and Tarik Skubal. Now, the majority of those are the young guys that you're excited for, so there's a little general prospect hype level built in. Skubal's a little bit different. Skubal's a guy that, me personally, I'm looking, you know, are you going to be in Arlington in mid-July? Are you going to be a finalist for the Cy Young? I think both of those things are very much in play. Skubal, by the way, is plus 900 for the Cy Young Award right now. Colt Keith, plus 1,000 for Rookie of the Year. Parker Meadows, not to be outdone, plus 1,300 for Rookie of the Year. And then we talked about Jobe and Jace a little bit. I think both those guys, Jobe and Young, deserve a ton of credit for maybe more so Jace. I think everyone kind of knew, like, if you paid attention, you were hyped for Jackson Jobe after last season. But Jace was like, all right, let's see the fielding. You know what I mean? Like, let's just kind of see how that goes. I feel like they've both been well earned, but I think he's climbed farther. Well, you look like you got an objection.
No, not an objection. Just a good point. I love talking to Alan Trammell. He has some really good insights after the spring breakout game. He was talking about Jace Young. One of the most interesting things he said, he's a guy you have to watch for a while. He grows on you. And I was like, that's so true. And if it's that way, you know, for Trammell, who has a great eye for talent, that's really interesting. Because that's how it's felt for me. Like, I never disliked Jace as a prospect. But I was like, you know, how will the hit tool play against higher-level pitching? I don't know, and I don't think he's actually a good fielder. And the more I've watched him, it's like, all this guy ever seems to do is hit. And I've been low-key quite impressed with how he's handled third base this spring.
Well, if there was a category of best PR of spring training, and I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but like best PR of spring training, you can't read a Jace Young story without talking about the work he does with Joey Cora before every, you know, game or whatever. Like that's kind of built into his profile at this point, is the kind of the hard worker, and kind of plays into what we talked about when he was drafted, where he's like this gritty, you know, blah, 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 all these like terms that
gritty,
can be cliche.
Ball player, gym rat.
Yeah, it can be cliche, but it seems like he's earned it. You know what I mean? So I think he's given Tigers fans a real reason to feel excited about what seems like a little bit inevitable about him getting called up at some point this year, and at least comfortable enough with the position change. That's another thing too, we can't dismiss, like, not considered a great fielder, and then you change him to the hot corner. You know what I mean? Like that's not nothing. So credit to him for getting to this point at this point. But I did want to add one little question about, or I guess thought discussion about Jackson Jobe. We talked about him earlier. Sort of stealing this from the Tigers minor league report, Motor City Metrics guys, who do a great job. But they were talking about, like, the call-up for Jobe. Does the Tigers' competitiveness in the division play a factor in either way? So let's just say I'm just making it up, like post All-Star break. Let's say it's post All-Star break and they're either right there, or even lead by a game, or, you know, whatever. Striking distance, I would say. Does that make you more hesitant to call up Jobe as if they were, or if they were like 12 games out of first place and, you know, the season's heading toward a, you know, a finish of, you know, you're not playing in the postseason at all. Are you more comfortable calling up Jobe in that type of situation, or do you want to throw him into a division race because he's one of your five best pitchers? Like, does that play a factor into anything? Because I think you can talk yourself into both, Cody. That's what, like, I would still call him up in that situation if he had earned it and you were playing like really meaningful games in August. Like, if he's one of your five best and he's ready, he's one of your five best, in my opinion. I wouldn't throw somebody out there just to preserve, like, you know, service time or any of these other kind of extracurricular reasons. But the Tigers are not on a 2024 plan. So I think it stands to reason, like, if they did choose that, which they, you know, have done in the past, like, I think it stands to reason that that is an avenue that can be taken. So on that kind of fake scenario, where do you kind of align?
Yeah, I think I'm going to do one of my favorite things and boil down a really complicated discussion to a Jim Leland line, which is kind of like, if he's ready, and if he's not, he's not. You know, the famous story about Leland going to Dave Dombrowski in spring training 2006 and basically being like, you got to give me Verlander and you got to give me Zamaya. Like, if you want to win, we got to take the best players and they're the best players. And that's how I would view it with Jackson Jobe. Maybe not like out of the gate this spring. There's a case he might be one of your best five right now. I think he should probably start the year in the minors. But if you're talking like, you know, later in the season, if you're in the thick of it, and you think he's one of your best guys, you think he can help you win games, yeah, I think you bring him up. And if you don't think he's ready for the spotlight, then that means he's not ready for the spotlight. I think the more interesting conversation is, like, let's say you're out of the race. Would you still bump him up? And you could kind of talk yourself into some circles on that one. It's like, maybe it's not worth it if we're not playing meaningful games, maybe let him develop and blah, blah, blah. And I think it should come down to the same thing. If he's ready, he's ready. If he's not, he's not. I don't think it should be, you got to trust your evaluation. And if your evaluation is ready, then you put the kid in the major leagues.
Yeah, I agree. I've just generally speaking moved past sort of like waiting on guys, and we'll see if the Colt Keith thing worked out, decision to not call him up last year, if it has any impact one way or another and they get proven right or wrong or, you know, whatever. But I do like Occam's razor. The simplest answer a lot of times is most correct. If he's ready, he's ready. I did want to shout out friend of the podcast, Keith Law, real quick. he had a story on The Athletic this week that it was like ranking rookies' impact in this season. So it's not a prospect ranking. It's like prospects who could make an impact in the major leagues this year. And on that list was Parker Meadows. And he had a line in there, but I was like, oh my God. Like, it took me aback. It took me aback. He basically said, and I'm going to paraphrase here, he'd be disappointed, he being Keith Law, be disappointed if Parker doesn't have like a 250 average and I forget the on base, but like, you know, in the 280s or, you know, whatever. I don't remember what it was. Be disappointed if Parker did not have a 250 average and whatever on base percentage. And I read that and I was like, man, is we sometimes think maybe we're overhyping Parker a little bit, and the fans on Twitter may be overhyping Parker a little bit. And then here comes Keith Law, Leroy Jenkins in the hype of Parker Meadows, basically being like, I'd be disappointed if he doesn't hit 250. Because if we're talking, he's hitting 250, you have to assume there's some power in there because he's, you know, he's got that in his bat. And you would, the safest assumption about Parker is his defense. And then you throw in, if they're going to be an aggressive team, you know, some steals or, you know, whatever. We talked about him being the most exciting player on the team potentially. I mean, you're looking at at a top three finish for rookie of the year, in my opinion, because all those things add up. If he's hitting 250 and does the other things that we expect to be more of a known commodity for his skill set, the ceiling is raised on this team. So I just wanted to shout out Keith Law for that, and just another wrinkle into the Parker Meadows hype that I was not expecting.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I think that bar is way too high. I think it's one of those things that like sounds great on paper and theory, but it ain't easy to hit 250 in the major leagues anymore. I don't have the exact stat in front of me, but I think, you know, the league average batting average is now like 230, if not lower. It's hard. I was doing some research on the fly here, too. There are three Tigers in the A.J. Hinch era who have had at least 500 at-bats in a season and hit above 250. Can you name them?
500 at-bats? No, I'm not going to be able to. I'm not going to be able to name them.
Jonathan Scope and Jamer Candelario in 2021. And last year, Matt Vierling. That's it. So, not easy to do. Not an easy feat to do. 250 for Parker Meadows would be a quite a big win.
Yeah, you'd be making some more
plate appearances, excuse me, not at bats for anyone who's going to go fact check me. That was based on plate appearances. Okay.
Well, I mean, yeah, if those numbers pan out, then your summer's going to get longer. I'll just phrase it like that. All right, Cody, a lot of fun little discussions. I consider this our last spring training pod, because next week we'll get into, it'll obviously be our last podcast before the start of the year, and we'll do some bold predictions, some rankings of, you know, things that can go wrong, things that could go right, you know, what they would mean. We'll get into all of this. So I consider this our last spring training podcast. So even though you still got to cover some spring training games, and we're going to talk about them too a little bit next week, I just want to congratulate you and all the listeners for sort of unofficially making it through spring training. Anything else you wanted to get into before we jet out here?
It's kind of like that injured list thing. It's not over yet. I haven't made it yet. But no, I'm as excited as anyone for the start of the regular season, opening day in Chicago. Going to be a lot of fun. I think that's all I got for now.
The ceaseless Chicago White Sox. So maybe another kind of ball that kind of breaks the way of the Tigers there. So you can follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Cody Stavenhagen. I'm at Kieran_Steckley. Pod page at Turn Corner Pod. YouTube, Turn the Corner Podcast. Subscribe to The Athletic if you want to read all of Cody's great work and that of his colleagues. Subscribe, Apple, Spotify, 5-star review if you feel so inclined. So for Cody Stavenhagen, I am Kieran Steckley. Everybody have a great week.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.